Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Guy Geish, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. You should know the drill by now. About twice a month, we meet and we talk to real revenue marketers and learn their tips and tricks on how to make that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. Now, before I introduce our guest today, I'd like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketing. And we invented this term probably in late 2010, and now I'm seeing it used in many, many parts of the market. It's almost becoming a ubiquitous term, which I just absolutely love. But when we're talking about revenue marketing, what we're talking about is the process of transforming marketing from a cost center to a revenue center. And everybody, almost every single B2B marketer is feeling this pressure to be accountable for revenue or for some type of financial metric. And revenue marketing is the discipline to achieve that financial accountability. And every revenue marketer that we have on this show is on that revenue marketing journey. And they're here with us to share what works, what doesn't work, which can also be very insightful, and their own gotchas or those hidden roadblocks along the way. And I am so pleased to introduce today's guest, Christine Nurnberger. Christine is the CMO of Bottom Line Technologies. And Christine's kind of busy these days because basically, her job at Bottom Line is to lead a global transformation of marketing. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Debbie. I'm so happy to be here.
And you know, I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. And for everybody listening, Christine is a handful of people that I put into a category that I call serial revenue marketers. And I know that you haven't been at Bottom Line for that long, Christine. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your role in the company? And specifically, what you were hired to do.
Sure, and thank you for that compliment. So I joined Bottom Line back in September, and I was hired really to structure a centralized marketing function. Bottom Line is actually a pretty large company. We have 1,400 employees globally and over 10,000 customers, but the company had grown primarily through acquisition. So in terms of marketing support and marketing as a revenue driver, that concept didn't really exist here. There were pockets of marketers that had come through the acquisitions, and you'd have one or two marketers supporting a line of business. And they were responsible for everything from website copy to events to field enablement to demand generation. And so you had pockets of that activity happening across the business, but it wasn't centralized. It wasn't aligned with business objectives. And frankly, the folks who were in those roles were pretty frustrated because I don't know one person who's good at all those things, of every discipline in marketing. So I was hired to come in and bring that together and to establish over an 18-month period a revenue marketing engine.
So let's talk about how Bottom Line Technologies knew that this is what they were looking for, because quite often, Christine, what I see is typically a VP level gets the idea for revenue marketing and then brings it into the company. But I think it happened a little bit differently at your organization. I think your CEO or your president had a vision for this.
Yeah, it really did start from the top down. And I think it was partly just the natural evolution of the business. Bottom Line, you know, as I said, had been comprised of many acquisitions, and what that can lead to is a company made up of all different piece parts from a technology perspective. So if you look at Bottom Line's trajectory over the past 10 years or so, immediate focus was placed on the technology, making sure that we had world-class solutions that would delight our customers. Next kind of focus and era was really around sales, and now we're really focused on marketing. The CEO committed to the board the year prior to my joining that marketing was going to be one of his four major growth initiatives, and it's been really exciting to see that come to fruition and to have the backing of the CEO at that level and the investment behind it.
And I do think you're absolutely right. You know that that's absolutely critical. And those companies that are truly going to achieve global transformation, I agree with you, Christine, it really needs to be from the top down. I think you can do it at a BU level, you know, if you're going to just be the VP and you'll drive that change. But I think that the approach that you and Bottom Line Technologies is taking, I think that is the way to absolutely be successful. So thank you for sharing that with me. So when you got into Bottom Line, you described a little bit around, you know, what the organization looked like. And so when you came in and you did your first level of analysis around what do I have to work with as I begin to create this global revenue marketing transformation plan, what did you find? And then how did you approach beginning to change things?
Well, it's interesting because in a lot of respects, I found a hidden gem that just needed to be polished. I found an amazing group of people who were probably not organized and aligned to the right overall objectives and didn't have the ability to focus on their discipline effectively. I found amazing technology. I found delighted customers. Customer delight is one of our guiding principles, and you just walk around the hallways and you see these logos with these quotes from these customers on how happy they are with our solutions and our teams. So I found, on the one hand, a hidden gem. On the other hand, I found a total lack of infrastructure around marketing. And that wasn't entirely surprising, but I think what did surprise me was the fact that it was lacking the infrastructure, but Bottom Line as a whole really didn't know what good looked like when it came to marketing. And what I mean by that is the techniques, the tactics, the lack of data-driven analysis. It was really interesting coming on board, and I met with one of our senior executives, and I was talking about retargeting and integrated content marketing and nurturing and progressive profiling through automation, and he paused me, so that sounds really, really great. I'm very excited, but I have no idea what you just said. So it was, you know, I have great assets to work with on the one hand. On the other hand, there was a decided lack of understanding of marketing and lack of infrastructure to work with.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think there's a hidden nugget in what you just shared with me. And for everybody listening, I call Christine an unconscious confidant, which means that she's been doing this for so long, she just assumes everyone gets what she says and knows how to do it as well. But when you came into the organization, you certainly had an organization that had a vision and as it being one of the top four areas for the company to focus on. But how did you educate the executives? What did that look like?
It was interesting. There were some steps forward and some steps back. I think critical to getting support and getting support early is to demonstrate quick and easy wins. So I had set the expectation up front that in terms of full revenue transformation, we were looking at a period of 12 to 18 months. We're a large organization. We have a high degree of complexity. We have seven business units that all kind of operate a little bit differently. I had to put all the staff in place. We had to get our Marketo instance up and running. So I had set the expectation that the transformation is not a quick and easy thing. But what I did do is work to quickly identify where I could score wins and demonstrate that the path we were on is the right path and is going to yield exceptional results.
So what can you give us an example of what a quick and easy win was and kind of how the company responded to that?
Sure. So we, Bottom Line Technologies, has traditionally shied away from public relations, as an example. And I know this is not as easy to associate with revenue, but if you hear me out, they'd shied away from public relations because of the type of clients we work with and the type of data we work with. There's just kind of a high degree of sensitivity around that. We were able to put together a very carefully crafted PR campaign that was precisely on message, executed flawlessly, and what I was able to demonstrate was the immediate uptick in web traffic, and then the ultimate conversion to leads. So, you know, just one very small tactical program executed with precision and then connecting the lines to an investment in one area of marketing and how that drives return.
I think that is such a great idea, and I think it's because you executed it with excellence, and you actually tied a PR initiative to actual conversions. I mean, you were thinking about that extra step, and I could see where, as an executive team, having a series of quick wins that demonstrate the power of the kind of marketing that you're doing now really, really helps them see the purpose and the drive behind that. So good job, Christine.
Thank you.
So many questions for you. So, and we did prep for this, but I'm just so fascinated with everything that Christine does. So let me ask you a little bit of a different question. So we talked a little bit about what you found when you came into the organization, and you talked a little bit about the lack of infrastructure and that the company did not know what good looked like. Can you tell us a little bit about the structure, the organizational structure that you came into, and how you have changed that structure and why?
Sure. So the marketing organization and marketing budget as a whole was not entirely anemic. It just really wasn't optimized effectively. So the marketing resources all lived within the line of business. And so because they live within the line of business, what they worked on, how they prioritized, where they focused was very much directed by usually the sales executive within that line of business. And the budget was also allocated out into the line of business. Knowing that this transformation had to be global and we don't have the scale to have a 200-person marketing organization, what I decided to do was create what I call global centers of excellence around certain marketing disciplines. So we have a global center of excellence for marketing strategy, a global center of excellence for product/solution marketing, for demand gen, for digital marketing, for marketing operations, and for marketing services like creative and events. And then we have what I'd call local execution, whether that's geographically local, like we have staff in Melbourne that are executing, leveraging what we're building from a global perspective. We have staff in Geneva and Reading in the UK, or local to the LOB. So we kind of have this hybrid model where we have these centers of excellence that everybody can leverage, but the LOB teams, the GMs that run the line of business, still have that connection, that one point into marketing and one throat to choke, so to speak. So it's served us pretty well. We're a little behind where I'd like to be in terms of really realizing the full efficiencies from the model, but we'll get there.
A year yet. So now, in these global centers of excellence, they report to you?
They do, yes.
Okay.
And now all the LOB staff, the local staff, also reported to me now as well.
Which was a change.
Big change.
Big change, okay. So let's talk about the centers of excellence, and then let's talk about the reporting change. So are these centers of excellence all in North America, or are they distributed across the globe?
Today, they're heavily based in North America. We're working to change that.
You probably want to create some best practices, foundations, and processes, then it makes it easier to roll it out on a global basis?
That's exactly right. I didn't want to bite off more than I could chew, and it's hard enough trying to lead this type of transformation in one language, let alone several.
I completely agree with that. And then let's talk about when you made the change in the reporting structure. Can you tell us how that occurred and how you handled that?
You know, it was interesting. When I joined, the CEO said, you know, we're centralizing marketing, which means the lines of business are losing some control, so you have to be sensitive to that, which I completely understood. And, you know, they can't be perceived that their level of service is going to drop. And I took that really seriously, so made a very conscious effort in the first couple quarters on board to not disrupt things too much. There were a lot of, you know, marketing we plan ahead, you know, at least 6-9 months. And so a lot of stuff was already in flight. So where I focused my attention was building the relationship so that when we did start to prioritize and allocate resources later, I had people's trust and credibility. I focused on putting infrastructure in place, and I focused on the quick wins.
Very practical, and very, very practical, and that's exactly what you want. So when you think about staffing these global centers of excellence, you've got to have people who are great at strategy, product launches, demand generation, digital, marketing ops. How did you find the people to staff? And then how is this team working to create the required global best practices for bottom line technology?
Well, it's interesting. Most of the folks that I brought on board to lead these disciplines, I've worked with in the past. So I brought in 9 people into the organization in different areas of the business, demand gen, product marketing, marketing strategy, marketing operations, and it's a great team, I'll tell you that. We've melded with the folks that were already here so well. And it just helps when you all speak the language, the same language. You all know the playbook. My most recent hire was Emma Rainey, our head of EMEA marketing. And I hadn't worked with her since, several years ago. And our first meeting, we sat down together. We're speaking the same language. We've run the plays before. We know the playbook. And that just allows us to move so much more quickly.
You know, and again, this is the reason why Bottom Line hired you is because you're an unconscious competent. You've done this in multiple companies, and clearly and you also know the people to bring in, and I think that's just great. And so as you work with these teams and these 9 folks that you've hired, and this is kind of like the foundation of the global centers of excellence that you're building, clearly you know these people, you know their talents, you know they speak that revenue marketing, digital marketing language. So how is this team working to create scalable best practices that can be pushed across the globe?
Each discipline or each marketing function, I would say, has their own path. So, for example, from a demand gen and content marketing perspective, the first thing Julie Brewer, our VP of Demand Gen, did was look at all of the assets we have across the company, map them into the buy cycle, identify where we had gaps, grade the content, put together, a best practice around content development. So that's one example. With regards to marketing strategy, we've been working on really tying very specific marketing plays to sales revenue objectives. So working with the business leaders to understand what is the total addressable universe, how much of that have we penetrated, what are all the sales metrics, and then how are we going to support that from a marketing perspective. From a digital perspective, we've been working behind the scenes to build out a new website that will hopefully be going live within the month. But there, again, we looked at what is the best practice in terms of content management, maintaining and building a CMS system, coding pages, SEO optimization with your content. So each of the functions has taken a little bit of a different path, but the idea and kind of where we're at now, which is fantastic, is we've got everything sort of templated. So everybody knows, what a playbook looks like. Everybody knows what we're going to be measuring. And so around the globe, we have that consistency.
So how do you plan to roll those global centers of excellence out into other areas of the globe?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's sort of happening organically, believe it or not. So as we built out and brought EMEA marketing online, if you will, the connection points just sort of happen organically. So the people who have like roles in the regions are very much in sync and working on the same initiatives with the same goal with a local flavor for execution.
So let's go back to those field marketers, because there were a lot of field marketers that were working with the different lines of business. And what do they think about this change, and how have they adopted to this kind of new role and new level of responsibility?
I think at first they were probably pretty terrified, but I'm really happy to say that their response has been unbelievably positive. Obviously, change is really scary. There had been a lot of turmoil in the marketing organization prior to my arrival. There hadn't been a clear strategy. They were not empowered as marketers. They were very much order takers. So coming into the organization and sort of changing that around, you guys are in the driver's seat. You're the marketing professionals. You're not a whipping post. You're not the order taker. You need to be a business person first. You're empowered to challenge. I will always have your back. I couldn't be more thrilled with the way the team has come together, the way we're structured. It's really a rock star team, and I'm so proud to be a part of it.
That's awesome. And did you give these field marketers any special training or any way to kind of help them get up to speed on this new way of marketing, a new way of thinking?
We did a bit of training, yes, particularly around Marketo and understanding how to use analytics to make decisions and drive behavior. So we did a bit of that. We also talked a lot about being a business person first and a marketer second. So what I mean by that is when someone comes in, as we all know they do, you know, some sales guy has this brilliant idea, ask the tough questions. So what are you hoping to yield out of this? What is your commit from a revenue perspective? How many companies do we have to target based on what conversion rate and what average deal size are you anticipating you're going to drive this return? And then be empowered to just say no, stay focused on the goal. You know, if we're seen as helpful and accommodating, all that stuff is great. But at the end of the day, we're here to drive organic revenue growth. That's what we're here to do. And anything else is a distraction in my mind.
So I love that answer. And you mentioned the sales team. So how has the sales organization at Bottom Line responded to this change in the role of marketing?
I'd say it's mixed, and the reason it's mixed is because with the previous marketing structure, everybody got a little piece of the pie. The marketing resources were spread like peanut butter across the globe and across 7 different business units. Now that we're operating at a more strategic level and aligning with revenue objectives, some of the sales leaders are getting less support, and it's because of the size of their line of business and the profitability and all of these important business metrics. So I think that the senior executive team absolutely understands it's the right thing to do, it's where we have to go, but I definitely have a few unhappy campers in the crew due to the fact that, you know, they think their business should get all the time and attention when in reality it's a tiny fraction of our revenue.
So you're just making business decisions. You're saying I have limited resources and I have limited budget, and I'm going to apply that in the areas where I can get the most return, just like a business person.
Absolutely.
Okay. I can see where that would be a big change for a lot of sales organizations who are accustomed to having marketing, you know, kind of be their support system, in other words. But if you're going to transform from being a cost center to a revenue center, Christine, you nailed it. Marketing has to take on a business perspective and run marketing like it is a business. There's just no question about that. So I want to talk for a few minutes, and we're running short of time, but I've got a few more questions for you, and your answers are just so practical and so delightful, so thank you. But if you take a look at, you've been there since September, what have been some of your top enablers, things that have happened within the organization that have really helped this change come about? And what have been some of the barriers, and how did you work with those barriers?
Sure. So I would say the number one enabler was timing, really more than anything. There was sort of a group of new executives that had all come on board that had a vision for where the company was going to go. We very quickly came together as a management team. We work really well aligning with objectives. And so having the support from other newer executives in the business was definitely a key enabler. I would say the other key enabler is back to the quick wins. The more you demonstrate, you know, quick, measurable success, the more people start to understand that, yes, okay, this can work. She's not crazy. And, you know, it will be an 18-month timeline to get to full revenue transformation. I've been very upfront with everybody about that. But those quick wins allow us to demonstrate momentum and prove out some of the theories that we know are going to be true. And in terms of barriers, I would say that the biggest one here for me was organizational complexity. I'm used to working in large organizations. Infor was a complex $2.5 billion organization. SunGard was a $1.5 billion organization with lots of business units as well. But the organizational complexity here was a bit more intense, I would say, because we were still at that point where we were very much operating the lines of business in silos. In the past 7 months, there have been huge strides to orient our organization based on how the market would view us versus, you know, what companies people came from and what technologies they're tied to. So the organizational complexity was definitely a hurdle. And then the other thing I would say, and I'm sure everybody on the phone can relate to this, but systems and data. One of the very first projects I initiated was getting Marketo contract signed and focusing on getting that up and running. But I have no historical benchmarks, which makes me really uncomfortable. So in terms of signing up to revenue projections, on the marketing side or the sales side, we don't have the data. We don't have the trending. So, in, you know, like any other company that's grown pretty quickly and come together through acquisitions, you know, Salesforce.com is structured in a way that's a little bit different by each line of business. So I'd say that the two hurdles were organizational complexity and then systems/data.
So one of the things you had mentioned at the center of excellence was marketing operations. Now, do you plan to keep that fully centralized in North America, or will you also globalize that function as well?
We are globalizing that function as well. So we will have local folks on the ground, ideally a local marketing operations person in each of our major offices.
And I think that I also think that that makes a whole lot of sense. So when you reflect on, you know, your journey with Bottom Line so far, and, you know, at the end of the day, if marketing is going to act like a business and assume financial accountability and help drive organic revenue, you know, you've got to at some point have that kind of impact on the company. And what would you say that your effect has been on the company so far?
That's a great question, and it's funny. I always reflect on what I haven't done. I rarely take a look back and say, huh, look what we've accomplished.
Go spend a good hour, and I think you're going to be amazed. There's great power in doing that kind of reflection, especially for somebody who's a high type A driver pusher like you are. So take a moment and reflect. I think you'll be very, very happy. But anyway, I didn't mean to disturb your train of thought. I just had to share that with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I think marketing, that the view of the marketing organization within Bottom Line has shifted substantially. We now have a seat at all the strategic tables. We are involved in important strategy discussions around acquisitions and directions of future product lines. That's been a really big shift, and it's happened rather quickly. In other organizations, I've sort of had to prove the demonstrated tangible impact on the business, and then you kind of get a seat at the table. Here, that's happened pretty quickly, and I think, you know, it enables me and my team to be successful, first of all, because we do need to operate like a business, but also allows us to, you know, help shape the company. And that has been, I think, probably the biggest accomplishment. Earning a seat at the table.
And that is an awesome accomplishment. So let's end up. I have a question that I typically ask everyone that I interview. And for you, Christine, if you had three pieces of advice for a marketer, and let's say maybe you met them at a conference and they said, Christine, we are just now beginning to think about how do we transform marketing at a global level. And we don't have a Christine in-house. What kind of advice would you give them?
The first piece of advice I would say is empower your people to think as a business person, not a marketer. Think business first, marketing second. That's really the only way you're going to make progress and demonstrate that you understand the linkage between marketing and revenue objectives. I'd say so. Business first, marketing second would be my first tip. The second tip is you don't have to go it alone. Your resources like the Pedowitz Group, there's a lot of great knowledge out there now about revenue marketing that didn't exist even 3 years ago. So there are plenty of resources to get educated. There are templates out there you can use. There are organizations like the Pedowitz Group that will help you get on that road and stay on that road. And then the third thing I would say in terms of a tip, and I know this sounds quite contrite, but really focus on the people. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you're spending more time with these folks at work than you do with anybody else in your life, and it's people that make it happen. And so making sure the employees and your staff and those around you really know the vision, sell them on the vision, make sure they understand it, make sure you clear all the questions about the vision, and then everybody gets marching in the same direction.
Let me share one conversation that I recently had with one of our top strategists here at the Petowitz Group. We work with companies, and we talk about this transformation, how we help companies in transformation. And we're probably working with probably three different large companies right now. And in one of those companies, they actually have a name for this transformation initiative. And it has executive buy-in, and it has been socialized, and it's being wrapped into every part of the business. And the other two companies, they didn't even have a name for the initiative. So can you guess which company is moving faster toward transformation?
Yeah.
So sometimes you got to have a vision, but if you name it and make it an initiative, make that vision into a plan and an initiative. So I think those three pieces of advice are fantastic. I think that I love the whole idea of empowering people, and because it starts there. So if you can help and empower marketing people to think and act and take on the responsibility of a business person, I think you'll go far. You're right about not going it alone, and you're also very right about 3 years ago there was practically nothing in the market. But now there's some really good successes, and there's a lot of ways to get great information on that. And then you're absolutely right. At the heart and soul of all of this is people, because change is all about changing behaviors and changing roles and responsibilities. And so I love the fact that you have the focus on that. So, well, you have been always a delight to talk to you, Christine. And I could talk to you forever and just pick your brain around the practical things that you're doing to transform an organization. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure, as always.
And for all of our listeners, remember you can download all these interviews from iTunes, or you can listen from your computer at Revenue Marketer Radio. And every month we also give away 10 free books of Rise of the Revenue Marketer, 10 free copies. So just go to Blog Talk Radio, go to the radio show, Revenue Marketer Radio, and there's a form there, and we'd love to have you win a free copy. And don't miss our next show. It's on June 18th. We'll be taking a summer break after that. But our next presenter is going to be really interesting, because her name is Becky Scarborough. She's the VP of Integrated Marketing at Computer Associates, and she is going to discuss the 3-year planning process, because to Christine's point, transformation is not for the faint of heart. I think 18 months is a very aggressive timeline. It takes someone like Christine to lead it. But I think that if you consider the role of marketing and how it's changing, having a 3-year horizon really, really works great. So, again, thanks, everybody. And remember, it is a great day to be a revenue marketer. And we'll see you next time.